Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You're listening to Kaya Biz. A few days ago, I was really pondering about South Africa's economic performance. I say this because last week when we were down in Cape Town for the delivery of the medium-term budget policy statement, as you can imagine, together with my colleagues, we spent a lot of time reading and researching where we are from a fiscal point of view. What objectives are set to be achieved given the new fiscal planning and structures that have been put in place? But outside of that, you also take a look at a number of the policies that are already tabled to ensure that South Africa is able to reach a significant level of economic success. Making sure that we unlock economic potential to create jobs and as a result, just be more globally competitive across the world. Now, despite all of that, I must tell you, we have been making some firm progress. In the last few weeks, we saw ourselves being removed from the grey list of FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. Coupled with that, the market received very positively the update that the Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana gave us in what's dubbed the mini-budget, essentially highlighting fiscal discipline, resilience, and key aspects to make sure that entities like SARS are further capacitated to ensure that they drive the revenue targets that we have as South Africa. On top of that, Friday was when we saw even better news. One of the ratings agencies, S&P, came out with a ratings upgrade for South Africa's long-term debt. They've moved our rating from a double B minus to double B and maintained a positive outlook for the country. Now, this is huge news, and the truth is we should be celebrating. But to help us put this into context and help us understand what it means, not only from a macro point of view, its influence on business, but also the influence that this could likely have on you and I. Sanisha Pakrisamy is joining us now as the Chief Economist at Momentum Investments. Sanisha, such a pleasure to have you with us. I can imagine the last few weeks have been incredibly busy for you, but overall, must be some good news and some celebrations as an economist as we witness just this positive sense of feedback we're getting as a country. I guess let's start there, just in terms of your analysis of the overriding themes.
Good evening, Gugu, and good evening to all of your listeners. You know, I think we've been chatting for some time now, but I do think that our narrative for South Africa has been steadily improving. And, you know, the proof is always in the pudding, and we've seen that in the last couple of weeks. You know, even though the market was anticipating that South Africa would drop off of the grey list, it was still, you know, a mark of further confidence in the country. We saw the tabling of the medium-term budget policy statement where the overriding revenue is expected to be utilized to actually cover some of the capital expenditure projects, which is quite a big improvement because we're now starting to see that gains in capital expenditure are finally starting to exceed the gains that we're seeing in things like compensation to civil servants. So some market progress, you know, some of the spending reviews are starting to throw up numbers that, you know, the market's getting a bit excited about. We've had the implementation of the formal adoption of the 3% target, which we know is really good for lower end consumers further down the line. And so, you know, the cherry on top was when S&P Global Ratings actually lifted South Africa's sovereign rating in line with ongoing structural reforms, improving growth momentum, fiscal prudence being adhered to. And I do think, even though it's not a direct correlation, the fact that we did drop off from the grey list also added to the confidence in bringing about that result.
Oh, certainly. I'm loving this because it is a breath of fresh air that we're seeing in terms of the efforts that South Africa has been putting forward. But let's zone into the ratings review in particular. From what we understand, this is the first credit upgrade that we've witnessed in two decades. Give us context into this, because two decades is quite a while.
You know, South Africa did experience quite a turbulent economic and political time, particularly after the global financial crisis. You know, we had some turbulence around the corrupt institutions in South Africa. So institutional credibility took a hit. Economic momentum started to fall off. We had very high levels of political uncertainty. almost a lot of question marks around the direction of policy in South Africa. And so we had a very weak fixed investment ratio. And that, of course, then spells trouble for longer term growth in South Africa. And so for that period of time, we saw steady downgrades coming through as economic momentum started to slow quite significantly. The political picture darkened for South Africa, investment prospects weakened. And, as we've been saying, quite a few of these markers have now started to turn the corner. We are still waiting for that confidence to truly translate into a higher fixed investment ratio by the private sector, but we are starting to tick more of these boxes now.
Let's contextualize this as well, Sanisha, because there was a time in South Africa where ratings downgrades just happened at a whim and very often during the previous administration. What I'm keen to understand is, helping us contextualize what this does mean for our fixed income space, and maybe simplifying it. Essentially, investors buying into our debt signifies a level of confidence they have in our ability to actually build a stable, confident, and ongoing economy with future growth prospects. Would that be a great way to actually simplify the context around this upgrade?
Definitely. And I think there's actually two contributing factors that have helped alleviate the burden of government debt. So the first one, as you note, is obviously if we have better ratings in South Africa, that translates quite well into a firmer currency. The outside world looks upon South Africa a bit more favorably in terms of our creditworthiness and the ability of our government to repay debts. The other one is the fact that we've had the formal adoption of the 3% target. And even before it was formally adopted by the finance minister, the fact that the Reserve Bank had noted to the market that they are implicitly targeting 3% saw a very big reaction coming through on the bond market. So we saw the yield curve adjusting on the back of that sentiment almost immediately after that July Monetary Policy Committee meeting. And when the yield curve shifted lower, it brought in borrowing costs for government. And we're already seeing it in the numbers. And so in the medium-term budget policy statement, we actually saw in the figures that debt servicing costs actually came down a fair bit on the back of that yield curve adjustment. Now, not too long ago, debt servicing costs were the fastest growing expenditure item for government. Now it's the fourth fastest growing. And so that shows us that there has been some positive benefits with that yield curve moving lower.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And I guess for us as day-to-day South Africans, debt servicing costs is typically the interest, the service costs, the administrative costs. What we would read on our bank statement, maybe if you have some kind of credit facility, that's essentially something that also happens at a greater scale when it comes to countries. What I am also intrigued by, Sanisha, as well, is that 3% target finally finding alignment, as you've mentioned, by National Treasury from a fiscal point of view, as well as the monetary policy regarding the SOBS MPC. Great news, but we do understand that there might be some short-term shock winds that we need to contend with, right? Especially from a growth point of view. Your analysis on this and just how we need to navigate the landscape, especially in light of the fact that there's an interest rate decision anticipated at the end of November this year.
So maybe just one extra point on that interest bill or the debt servicing cost for government. Essentially, if government is spending, 20 cents out of every rand that they collect in revenue on servicing that big debt burden, it means that that money can't be spent on social delivery outcomes, such as building new schools or hospitals. And that's really the trouble with having a big interest burden. In terms of the 3% target, ultimately, there are some sacrifices that have to be made in the short term in order to get inflation expectations lower. Now, I think what does help the Reserve Bank is that around the world, we've seen that central banks have been playing around not only with the target, but also the horizon in which they achieve the target. And explicitly in the statement by the finance minister during the medium-term budget, he did say that we've got a period of 2 years in which to bring inflation expectations down to that 3% mark. So it does give them a little bit of leeway that if we get inflation, that jumps a little bit higher than 3%, that they can potentially say that they're looking through those initial shocks and they're waiting to see if there's a further secondary round impact. Is it really becoming embedded in inflation in a bigger way? I guess that gives them a little bit of leeway there. We also know that administered prices, your electricity costs, the rates, the water, those tariffs are now accounting for under 13% of your total inflation basket, whereas before that inflation basket re-rating came about, it was at a much higher 17 to 18% of the basket. So that also helps the Reserve Bank. The third element that helps the Reserve Bank is traditionally in South Africa, like many other emerging economies, inflation expectations tend to be a bit backward looking. And so if you are, let's say, a blue collar worker and, you know, you've just bought a loaf of bread a week ago that was, you know, high in cost, and you look at your taxi fares, you then believe that in the next year, inflation is going to be just as high, backward-looking inflation expectations. But what the Reserve Bank have calculated is that increasingly so, expectations on inflation are becoming more forward-looking. And I think what's helping that is the credibility of the Reserve Bank. We all buy in to the fact that the Reserve Bank will target inflation at 3% and will be able to anchor expectations there. So on the back of those three elements, I think it does, you know, cut away from that sacrifice ratio. And so it does limit that shorter-term pain. And we know that the longer-term benefits of a lower inflation target are lower borrowing costs, high affordability for consumers to buy a home, lower borrowing costs for government. And so they will have more money to spend on the things that really matter for citizens.
Got you. And I think it's so imperative that you say this, right, for us to understand the full spectrum view. An unfair question, but does this mean that we should anticipate an interest rate cut next or not? Is it next week? It's usually the end of November. Are we there already? My goodness, time is gone by.
It's going to be on Thursday this week. We're getting one more inflation print before the Monetary Policy Committee meeting on Thursday. That inflation print is coming out tomorrow. So I think, you know, all eyes will be on that inflation print. We are in an upward cycle of the inflation numbers. So a little bit difficult for the Reserve Bank to then, you know, cut into a rising inflation figure. But I think where they can position it is to say that they are forward looking. You know, they have a 12 to 18 month view when they look at inflation. So they don't actually, you know, make the decision on what yesterday's inflation or today's inflation print is. And so I think they will use that. I think, you know, the factors are stacking up quite positively. We saw quite a positive move in the rand more recently on the back of improving sentiment. And so I think, you know, the risks to seeing a further interest rate cut this week is certainly higher than what we would have thought a month ago.
Gotcha. Oh, well, we're looking forward to it. We certainly hope it does happen. It comes just in time for the festive season, back to school trends as well that we typically see towards the end of the year, that last quarter rally in the retail sales space. Sanisha, I could talk to you all day. I've even forgotten that the interest rate announcement is this week because there's a lot going on. But thank you again for your time as well as amazing insight as always.
Thanks so much, Gugu, and let's hope that we get that early Christmas present.
Yes, oh, it would be appreciated. That is Sanisha Pakrasamy, who's the chief economist at Momentum Investments, joining us tonight to help us remind us of the good news that South Africa has been receiving. Yeah, if ever there was a time to be confident and optimistic, and more so, do more work to continue this rally that we're on, it's now, because we are finding that there's just a positive sense of momentum, optimism, and an understanding of the shifts in strategy we're implementing, from our fiscal positioning, the removal of South Africa from the FATF grey list, the upgrade that we had from S&P, essentially allowing international investors to be a lot more confident to put their money in a country like South Africa. And of course, for you and I, fingers crossed, thumbs held, that we do get that interest rate cut before the end of the week by the MPC. Ooh. What a time.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.